It's been a week when big financial decisions are being guided, especially by politics, and confused by the vagaries of economic forecasting. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. It has been an intense week full of uncertainty. Let's go right to an assessment from Christopher Lowe, the chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, David.
So the guardians of interest rates at the Fed speak, and the chair was not seeming all that happy about the U.S. economy next year. I guess that could keep an interest rate rise at bay.
It certainly could. This was such an interesting meeting, partly because we had a ton of guidance beforehand from Fed officials, essentially assuring us that nothing significant was going to happen. Then they came out of their two-day conclave, and they've dramatically changed their own forecast of interest rate policy, not just next year, but into the long run.
It's a very different view. There are so many unknowns, and these very powerful policymakers are acknowledging they're not quite sure where the momentum is going.
Well, that's right. Actually, James Bullard, who's the president of the St. Louis Fed, came out this morning and said he abstained from even trying to make a long-term forecast. He said he's not going to do it anymore. It's just, it's such an uncertain environment. He said the exercise is futile, which is probably right, but also a little scary.
Another cauldron of uncertainty is the vote next week in Britain about whether to stay or leave the European Union. Why are financial markets paying such close attention to this?
Well, in a nutshell, it comes down to this, whether it's buying a crude oil contract or buying stocks is an assessment of risk. And if Britain chooses to leave the European Union, it's very difficult to know what the risk factors are going to be for commodities, for economic growth, and for company earnings. And when that sort of thing happens, investors tend to step back as a group from all risk assets. Translated into English, if Britain leaves, there will be turmoil in financial markets for a few days, maybe a few weeks, until people can figure out what it means.
All right. You working next week, Chris?
I am.
Well, me too. We'll watch this thing. Christopher Lowe at FTN Financial. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Vanity Fair is reporting that Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump may be interested in starting his own cable TV network, branded with his own name. The suggestion is the candidate sees other networks drawing ratings and making money based on his candidacy and wants a piece of the action. The campaign denies a Trump network is in the works. Also, the New York Times is reporting that some top people from the financial world plan to attend a Donald Trump fundraiser in New York next week, including billionaire hedge fund man John Paulson, Steven Feinberg of Cerberus Capital, and real estate tycoon Peter Calico. So Allegis, Adecco, Randstad, they're not exactly household names, but these multi-billion dollar companies play a key role in the American economy, supplying temporary workers to the Fortune 500 and more. As Sarah Gardner reports for our series with Business Insider called The Price of Profits, they're capitalizing on what you might call domestic outsourcing.
Hey, Jamie, it's Sarah calling from Randstad. I was reaching out. We got your resume out to one of our clients.
When Sarah Tinsley calls, it's a job calling. She recruits workers in the Nashville area for Randstad USA, the staffing firm that made a name for itself, supplying 16,000 temps to the 96 Olympics in Atlanta.
And if I'm not available, you can also ask for Stephanie. Thanks. Bye.
Here in Tennessee, temp workers make up almost 4% of the workforce. Nationally, it's less, but you'll find temps everywhere now. They're in factories, call centers, and corporate suites. They can be CFOs, engineers, and doctors. Jim Link is chief human resources officer for Randstad North America. He says after the recession, so-called contingency workers turned from stopgap measure to permanent corporate policy.
More and more employers began to build models of getting work accomplished through something other than a full-time employee.
Companies like using temporary labor. They can quickly staff up or down as markets change. They don't have the hassle of handling worker benefits or the costs of hiring and firing. And it allows companies to launch new projects without raising employee headcount.
I think investors, to some degree, pay attention to profit per employee.
The staffing industry is now at an all-time high. Nearly 16 million Americans worked as a temp or contractor for a staffing agency last year, $120 billion in sales. That's $13 billion more than Amazon. But it's not as lucrative a business as you might think. Steve Burcham is COO of the American Staffing Association, a trade group that represents a majority of the industry.
Profits in the staffing industry are similar to those in the grocery industry. We're talking pennies on the dollar, low single digits. So it's not an extraordinarily profitable business, but there is high volume.
Agencies typically make the most placing people in permanent jobs, but that is getting harder, says Randstad regional exec Lakita Stribling.
It used to be at a time where if the person had good work ethic and good people skills, that companies were willing to bring them in and train them. We don't see that very much at all anymore.
A catch-22 for many, since one of the best ways to update your skills is on the job. In Nashville, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
We also ran an interview today with a business professor who's been tracking the temp economy. He argues that public corporations are not really in the business of hiring people anymore. It's part of our week-long series, The Price of Profits. If you want to hear that, it's in the earlier Marketplace podcast this morning. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.